Okay, so last week we had seen Pasuk, Perek Yudches, Pasuk Dalet. Mayim Amukim Divrei Fi Ish. Deep waters are the words of a person's mouth. Nachal Noveya Mekar Chachma. It's a flowing stream, a source of wisdom. And we saw the very, very divergent pshatim of the Metzilas David on the one hand and the Malbim on the other hand. You know, basically, are these Mayim Amukim, we talk about the depth of the waters, is that a good thing or a bad thing? We saw the Metzilas David spoke about Mayim Amukim, that the deep waters referred to knowledge and wisdom which is inaccessible. And the Metzilas David contrasted secular knowledge with Torah knowledge. Secular knowledge oftentimes is so deep that it's inaccessible, you can't really get to the bottom of what's being discussed. Whereas Torah knowledge is a Nachal Noveya, is a flowing stream which contrasts with Mayim Amukim. You know, it's kind of like the water is flowing forth of its own accord. And, you know, basically says in Metzilas David, the metaphor is that if a person makes the effort to acquire Torah knowledge, the water, so to speak, rises to greet that person, something which we don't find with secular knowledge. The Malbim had a totally different pshat. The Malbim equated the three phrases in the Pasuk, Mayim Amukim, Mekar Chachma, and Nachal Noveya, that basically deep in everybody's soul is this wisdom. There's a certain natural innate chachma that the person has. We spoke about last time Rav Soloveitchik's pshat in the uber. You know, the Gemara says the nida that the fetus, when it's in its embryonic state, when it's in utero, so the malach comes and teaches it kol ha-Torah kula, teaches it the entire Torah, then smacks it on the way out. And it forgets everything. So the Rav said that's a metaphor which is supposed to teach us the idea that, you know, really wisdom is something that we all have inside of us. And anything that we're learning now, we're just relearning. You know, it's something that we knew already. It's basically innate to us. So it's Mayim Amukim. It may be buried deep in the person's neshama, but when you bring it out, you know, it's a Nachal Noveya. It springs forth of its own accord. Once you just tap into that very, very deep knowledge, which everyone has innately and inside of them. Just wanted to share with you this, you know, along the lines of the Malbim, a little different, but along the lines of the Malbim, is the comments Rabbeinu Yonah has on this pasuk in Mishle. You don't have it in front of you, but I'll read it. The Rabbeinu Yonah writes, a wise man from whom wisdom springs forth like a brook, like a spring. Divrei piv kemayim amukim. The words of his mouth are like deep waters. Ashelo yagia ha'adam l'shtos mehem. Adashi yitrach v'yidle osam. This is very similar actually to what Shelley said last time. That, you know, when a wise person has wisdom, you know, when a wise person is constantly giving forth wisdom, it's not the sort of thing which is easily accessible. You have to work, you have to harava, so to speak, you know, in order to understand what a wise person is saying. Kain lo yovin ish divrei hachacham hanavam. So too, it's not a simple thing for a person to understand a truly wise person. V'lo yamar al daito zulasi b'torach uv'marchei lev lohavin bohem. And you can only really get what the wise man is saying with work and effort, you know, to really try to plumb the depths, you know, of what the person is saying. And the Rabbeinu Yonah adds as follows. Ubo lehazir b'nei adam b'shamon divrei chacham v'navon, shlo yedamu b'nafshom kehevinu devarav l'mishma oznam. The point of this pasuk, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rabbeinu Yonah, again, is very into Musar, you know, practical, take-home lessons, you know, that you can take from the words of Mishle. So says the Rabbeinu Yonah, the point of this pasuk is to tell you that when you hear a wise person say something, don't think that you understood him at first glance. You know, don't assume that the way you absorbed what he said right off the bat is automatically the simple, the obvious interpretation of what he's saying. Don't think, oh yeah, I totally got the shiur. I got everything he was talking about. When a wise person says something, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, think about it two times, think about it three times, you know, contemplate it, review it, try to penetrate it, because there's going to be, almost by definition, a lot of depth there that you're going to miss the first time around.
That's right. You don't have a special definition of wise person, like Michelet. How does he define it? Ralph can tell us.
I don't know.
A wise person.
I don't know. I mean, assuming he's talking about a Torah scholar. In other words, again,
so it's just like a Malvim, it's wisdom of the ages.
I think so. Right, I think so. In other words, you know, the truth is, to an extent, it's probably true of any secular discipline as well. In other words, a big mathematician gets up and gives a lecture. You know, it probably behooves the person to think about it two or three times also, you know, and not to just assume, oh, yeah, well, I got everything he was saying. You know, there was anyone who's an expert in any kind of discipline, you know, there's a certain profundity that they have which doesn't come across necessarily. You know, when you just hear the person superficially. But I think, you know, throughout Mishlei, he's assuming that the Chacham we're talking about is a Chacham b'Chachmas HaTorah. So he writes, U'pe'amim rabos yarich ha'chacham b'dvarav l'chlo b'hem tam yisalik midvarav kol koshi yutshuva. Sometimes you'll go to a shir, says the Rabbeinu Yonah, and the Chacham seems to be overly verbose. You know, he's repeating and he's going on. And you think to yourself, okay, like, I got it. You know, what's it going on about? And Rabbeinu Yonah says, you don't understand. Oftentimes, he's speaking at length because the way he presents something subtly, or the choice of word, or the choice of phrase, or whatever it is meant to address a certain question that he hasn't raised explicitly. You know, he's putting it this way. You know, you didn't catch that. Because, in other words, you're not attuned to the answer that he's giving to the question because you don't think of the question, right? But had you, you know, when an hour after the shiur, say, wait, how can it be, you know, X, Y, Z, you have all these different kind of questions. So the answer was already in his words, except that because you weren't attuned to the question, you didn't pick up on the answer that was there. V'lo yovin ha-shomeh ar achre ha-machshava v'ho'iyon. Right? And, you know, that the person listening won't really understand the answer that's there until he really sits and works out the implications of what the Chacham was saying. I mean, the greatest example of this idea that Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is Rashi's commentary anywhere. Yeah. I mean, Rashi was a master of the succinct vort, both in Chumash and in Gemara. And, you know, Rashi seems deceptively simple. And yet how many super commentaries have been written on Rashi, you know, where, you know, the question is, why did Rashi use this word as opposed to that word? Why did Rashi pick this medrash from Chazal and ignore that other medrash from Chazal? Why did Rashi bring the medrash from Chazal but subtly change the last phrase? Again, things which when you read it quickly, all right, Rashi said it, you know. Because it isn't presented in a question and answer format, you don't always catch the profundity of Rashi. But again, people make their, you know, their lives and learning going through Rashi on a Gemara and, you know, trying to point out, you know, that every word in Rashi was weighed. And if you read Rashi carefully, all of the arichos, which you find in the other Rishonim, Rashi was really getting at. You know, he's really addressing all those questions by choosing this word as opposed to that word and whatnot. You know, even the Dibra Maschil, you know, the particular words in the Gemara that Rashi chose to comment on, these as opposed to those words, oh, that's indicative of what Rashi must have been thinking. Again, Rashi's the master of that, but, I mean, you see that even, you know, even in dealing with people, the way, you know, you deal with a certain Talmud Chacham, the way he chooses to phrase something usually is chosen very, very carefully, you know. And, you know, there takes a lot of chokhmah sometimes to even penetrate what he's getting at. I had this experience with a certain posek once. So we had, up in the country, we had a, you know, backyard Eruv, which, you know, like, right before Shabbos experienced some difficulties, okay. So, he happened to be coming by, so I pointed out the situation to him, and he looked at it and said, yeah, the Chacham Tzvi in the Tshuva writes that kind of Eruv is good. Okay, you know, I kept pressing him a little bit. He kept saying, the Chacham Tzvi. Right. I said, and what does Rebbe hold? Mm-hmm. So he shrugged and said, I thought the Chacham Tzvi was totally wrong. Totally against the Gemara. Right? So Yes, it's for sure a possible Eruv. What are you talking about? Right? But, you know, some until you get to that, right? Again, you have to just, sometimes you have to be medayik in the Lashonos. You know, you have to be very, very, very careful how somebody says something, when they say something. You know, the true Chacham doesn't always reveal everything, you know, right at the top. It's my mamukim. You know, you sometimes have to get down to the bottom of what he's talking about. And adds the Rabbi Yonah, you're talking kiboha in yonazal masha omer bevo rosha bo gambuz. Maybe there's a connection, says Rabbi Yonah, between this and the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk said that when a rosha comes, there comes buz, right? Not schnapps, right? But there comes degradation. You know, a rosha walks into the room and he puts people down. Pi rosha ki a rosha yovuz l'divrei hamaskilim. The nature of a rasha is when he hears somebody wise get up and say something, his immediate reaction is just to dismiss it, to put it down. And that's because he doesn't understand this process whereby we have to delve into the words of the Chachamim and that they're not immediately apparent or understood. You know, we have to give them some time until we can get them to yield, you know, all of the treasures that are contained therein. Okay, so that's really just, I wanted to pick that up from last week. And take a look a little weiter in Pasuk Hey. Se'es p'nei rasha lo tov. It's not good to show favor to a rasha. It's not good to indulge a rasha. Sometimes you think, okay, I'll let him get away with it this time. I won't call him on what he did this time. But what ends up happening is it creates a pattern where the Rasha begins to feel that he can get away with whatever rishis he's engaged in. Vahatos tzadik b'mishpat. And ultimately, to pervert a tzadik in judgment, ultimately, if one indulges the Rasha, one ends up putting a tzadik in a situation where he is going to be, his judgment is going to be perverted. He's not going to be treated properly because you indulge the Rasha. You think, okay, what's the big deal if I let the Rasha get away with it? Who's it going to hurt? Ultimately, you know, not calling the Rasha on his bad deeds and allowing him to build himself up is going to be a source of injustice either now or down the line for somebody who's a tzaddik, for somebody who's truly innocent and doesn't deserve what they're going to get.
But there are occasions when you let it go, I think, to wait for a more opportune time, whatever the reason.
Right, right.
Because it might be more effective, for example.
Right, right. I think Mishle is suggesting that it's lo tov, it's not good. Meaning, it's important to recognize that even if you have a cheshbon as to why you're waiting to do it later, realize that it's inherently not good. Now again, you may say it's inherently not good, but there are other mitigating factors that say that I should not address them now, I'll address them later on. Okay. But sometimes we say, oh, it's not such a big deal, it doesn't really matter. And we should realize that even if for whatever reason we choose not to confront the Russian now or to call him on his actions, it does matter. You know, every act that he does build up, you know, towards giving him a greater degree of strength and security. In his rishos that he's engaging in.
But where in Mishlei does it say a time frame? It just says not confronting him. It doesn't tell me a time frame.
Yeah, in Ochinami, the time frame, I don't think you see in the pasuk itself.
It's whenever one confronts him. So it just doesn't say you must do it within 2 minutes after he does something erroneous or
right.
wrong.
But eventually. Eventually.
You don't then go without it, but right. you can choose.
Can't choose the
time when you confront him.
Right, in Ochinami. I mean, and in fact, you know, again, sometimes, you know, this time is going to be better, that time is going to be better. You know, you can't always, immediately is not always going to yield the proper response. Let's take a look in the Malbim. Se'es p'nei rasha l'tov v'hatos tzadik b'mishpat. And then the Malbim connects that to Pasuk Vav. We'll take a look at Pasuk Vav. Sif se'chseil yavo v'riv, the lips of a chseil, a fool, they come with fighting, with argument. Says Rashi, kol dvar boim b'lashon tagara. You speak to a fool, every time he's very combative. Right? You know, you can't have, you know, there's certain people, you know how this is, right? You can't have a pleasant discussion with them. There's no such thing as agreeing to disagree. You know, everything is a back and forth, you know, everything is a challenge. Right? So that's the nature of a ksil. Sif se ksil yovo b'riv. He's always looking to pick a fight. Ufiv lemahalumos yikra. His mouth calls out to blows. Right? Mahalumos are if you look in the Mitzvot Tzion, he says inyan hakaa. Right? You know, it's the concept of blows. And as every time he speaks, you know, he's picking a fight. You know, he's challenging you, so to speak, to come to blows. Rashi has a different pshat in the last part of that pasuk, by the way. Pivla mahalumos yikra. Rashi writes, kori li yisurin la'avion olav. The blows are not the blows that the Rasha wants to inflict on others. The blows are the yisurin, the aspects of suffering which he's going to bring on himself by virtue of his, you know, his combative, very argumentative kind of attitude. You know, ultimately, if you're going to go through life, you know, looking to stick it to other people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish you in return by bringing all kinds of suffering upon you.
That's consistent with what he says in the previous pasuk too. It seems lo tov is not good for the Rasha.
Right.
He's going to get it later.
Right, right. We'll come back to that Rashi over there. Yeah.
We're trying to go around this. You were talking before about the tzaddik giving knowledge and whatnot, and how we have to think about it and all this and that. Okay, not all of us are smart enough to think about it. To be fair, me in particular, I was never the brightest kid in the class, not even the 10th brightest kid in the class. If you're going to sit there, you see how you're breaking everything down, the way you're breaking it down. You're doing that for a reason, because you want us all to understand what you're saying. You want everybody here to understand. If you're going to sit there and speak in these highfalutin words that no one knows what the heck you're talking about,
right.
Even if I go home and think about it, I might come to a completely erroneous right. conclusion. Right. You, not you personally, but as the tzaddik, the rabbi, the one who's giving the shiur, you have to come down to earth and realize that there are people who are listening to you. There's 100 people in your shul listening to your shiur, or, right. or 1,000 people reading your book. And you've got to break it down a little, mm-hmm. because otherwise, you've lost.
The truth is, you're absolutely right. The sign of a great Magid Shir is that you can give a Shir which hits everybody on their level. In other words, the profundity is still there, you know, and somebody's going to dig beneath the surface will find that profundity. But it's also accessible to somebody who isn't even, you know, willing or able to dig. I remember hearing the story, you know, in the previous generation, Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, I mean, was a master Magid Shir, not just because he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but he had the incredible ability to communicate Torah to people. I mean, other Rosh Yeshiva, who were his contemporaries, were known as being Geonim, and nobody could understand what they were talking about. You know, I mean, you know, there were the three Talmidim sitting there who understood really what the Shir was gone. Everybody else was, you know, was flying up there. Rabbi Rafin told me a story about a certain Rosh Hashiva from the previous generation. And, you know, one of his Talmidim was describing how he gave Shir. So he said, Rav so-and-so, you know, comes to the Shir, he puts down a brick and another brick, and another brick, and another brick, and he builds up the shir, and then he's standing up on top of the edifice, and everybody else is down at the bottom, you know? So they tell the story of a certain person, Balabas, who had been told about, you know, the glory of Rav Soloveitchik's shiurim. So he went to hear one of the shiurim. They asked him afterwards, how was it? He said, you know, I'll tell you the truth, I wasn't so impressed, I understood the whole thing. You know? So, I mean, the truth is that's the sign of greatness. That's the sign of greatness. You know, you can take something very complicated and present it so that everyone can understand. But, you know, believe me, there was a tremendous profundity there that besides his being able to understand everything at the first shot, you know, had he sat, gone over it and really delved into the depths of what was being presented and how it was being presented and why he said this and not that, you know, and why he presented it this way, not that way, you know, there was a whole world to be mined over this. I mean, that's really the sign of a great Magid Shir, that it hits everybody at their level. It doesn't sacrifice the profundity, but you're right. I mean, you know, there should be an entry level, you know, to the person as well. So, we have these two psukim. Again, a person is not supposed to indulge the Rasha, and the fool comes ready to make a fight. So, says the Malbim, let's put these two psukim together. Pasuk K in the Malbim, the second white line. Seis pnei rasha lo tov lahatos tzadik b'mishpat sivsik sil yavo b'riv. Kvar omer gam onosh lat tzadik lo tov. Shehu ha-she'ilo she-sho'alim b'hanahogo lom ha-shem manishas ha-tzadik. Ve-omer al-zeh chosei chamorov yodei adas gam evil macharish chacham yechoshev. We had this psukim earlier where the pasuk says that a person asks the question, why is it that God punishes the righteous? Why do the righteous suffer? Right? And the pasuk in Mishlei said that the only real response we can give to that is silence. We don't really know. We don't really have a good answer to why the tzaddikim suffer. V'tzir she'evo yacharish lo yishal she'ela zos lif'amim ki ha'evil cholek al chukei ha'chochma m'meishim mislapek bohem ve'eno rosham m'meita avosam v'lochein lif'amim yacharish v'lo yishal she'elo so'ele she'elo aleim dover boru rak sveikos. The evil, who again according to the Malbim is the skeptic, will Taka not ask this question over and over again, because the truth is he doesn't have a good answer, and he's Taka a skeptic. In other words, if you're an atheist, or even an agnostic, I mean, that's probably, Avil is more of an agnostic, the way the Malbim presents it, an agnostic doesn't feel the need to ask, why does God punish the righteous? Because basically the answer that he'll give is that, you know, he doesn't believe in a deity altogether. Right, so from the agnostic's perspective, or at least he's not sure whether there's a deity, from the agnostic's perspective, he's not likely to ask that question. The truth is that question, why does God punish the righteous, is more of a believer's question. It weighs on the conscience of the believer more, because if you're a believer in God, it really bothers you that God, you know, punishes the righteous. If you're agnostic, you know, so it doesn't bother you so much because you have a very simple solution. I mean, unfortunately, the simple solution is, well, I don't believe in God anyway. If I don't believe in God, you know, so then what kind of question is that? Right? So that's, the skeptic won't really ask that question. However, aval aksio, yodea chukei achachma v'cholak aleya, mepneish ki akpa alav ta'avos l'chapes alilos b'resha, usfasov yovo b'riv yishal ha-shelos o'ele shteyen, fascinating interpretation of the pasuk. Says the Malbim, the Ksil, who according to the Malbim means somebody who really believes in wisdom, in Torah, but because of his tavos, because of his desires to do what's wrong, you know, puts on the face, the mask of somebody who constantly questions Yiddishkeit, that guy is the guy who's constantly running around and saying, you know, I don't understand, why do the righteous suffer? If you're a real bona fide agnostic, you don't run around asking the question. It's the guy who has a bone to pick with Yiddishkeit, who really does believe in it on some level, but wants to convince himself and others that, you know, he wants to be able to indulge his taivas and do whatever he wants. That person is constantly asking the question about Sadik Virello, because that reassures him that he can go and do whatever he wants. So in other words, the way Pasuk Hei is interpreted according to the Malbim is the words of this seal, quote unquote, Seis Pnei Rasha Lo Tov. When God shows favoritism to the Rasha, it's not good. Lahatos tzadik ba mishpah. When God perverts the judgment of the tzaddik, it's not a good thing. That's sifsei ksil yovo v'riv. The lips of this ksil, of this person who seeks to justify his own hedonistic lifestyle, yovo v'riv, he's constantly bringing an argument against God. When you hear a guy, you know, it's reminiscent of, you know, the Shakespearean line, you know, methinks the lady doth protest too much. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, when your guy is constantly running around, you know, talking about how he has questions on God, he has questions on God, he has questions on God, it means he really does believe in God. It's just, you know, something within him doesn't want to follow the path of Torah. Right? The real agnostic, or certainly the atheist, isn't so bothered with questions, because
he's like you know, a contrarian, let's say.
Right, exactly.
Certain people are just contrarians.
Right. You know, he's being contrary for the sake of being contrary.
I think the Malbim is giving us some context to who the Rasha is. He's this guy who questions God's decisions, or not God's decisions so much, but the fact that there is pain and suffering in the world, and they sometimes would fall in the, into the lap of a tzaddik or something like that. In other words, because before we got into the Malbim, I was thinking to myself, Mishle is teaching us to not let comments that are somehow Russia comments, not let them just lie fallow. We're supposed to confront that.
Right. That is, I think, the first pshat that we gave in the pasuk. Seis b'nei Rasha l'tov. We shouldn't indulge the Rasha. Right. The Malbim is giving a very fascinating interpretation. He's putting these words into the mouth of the Rasha, and he's saying, you know, the Rasha questions God, or the Ksil rather questions God by saying, you know, Seis b'nei Rasha l'tov. God, how can you indulge, you know, the evil people? You know, isn't that wrong of you?
Oh, I thought he was saying, Malbim was saying, this is the Russia that we're talking about, the guy who goes around questioning God all the time. We have to confront that guy. We have to confront that person.
But I think you're putting the two pshatim together, actually, which is good. I mean, you know, they're
because it's a very delicate, task to confront somebody.
Without coming across as yourself being a seal.
Right, exactly. Right. That's what we spoke about by Shal Shittus a little bit yesterday. Right. You know, the idea of Hocheach Tochiach with the Sefer Hasidim. We started learning Sefer Hasidim by Shal Shittus. So the Sefer Hasidim writes that, you know, when you, although there's a mitzvah in the Torah of Hocheach Tochiach, of giving somebody Musa, the way to do it is benachas. The way to do it is a very pleasant and gentle fashion.
Okay,
if you come on. I'm sorry? Right. If you come on strong, you just, the person's just going to have, you know, a stubborn and angry response, and you won't really have achieved anything.
No.
Yeah.
What is the goal supposed to be when you say
I mean, the goal of Hocheach Tochiach is ultimately to get the guy to reform his ways. So again, if you come in with a baseball bat, you smack the guy over the head, it won't necessarily you know, lead him to change his lifestyle. He's just going to go out and buy another baseball bat, you know, and come back at you, you know. So, you know, that's the... Unfortunately, people often don't realize that. People think that there's an inherent value just in screaming at people. You know, I get it off my chest. I'll show him, you know. No, the point is to bring him back. So if the point is to bring him back, that means you have to figure out tactics which are going to bring him back. You know, sometimes yelling at a person is what does it, because sometimes that's just the only way to get through to them. But, you know, more often than not, it's the gentle response which is actually going to be more effective. Exactly, right. So actually, it's interesting you mentioned that, because the Rabbeinu Yonah brings that in with regard to our pasuk over here. Well, we'll see that in just a minute. Anyway, the second pasuk, Sifsek Seal Yavo Beriv. So according to the Malbim, the words of the Ksil come, these words in Pasuk Hey come as part of his argument. Upivla mahalumos yikra, his mouth calls out for blows. So let's just see the next line of the Malbim. Sifsek Seal Yavo Beriv, upivla mahalumos yikra, hasvosayim hem yedabu dibra achitzoni, the lips speak on the outside. Vapei yedabu dibra apnimi b'chachma, the mouth is more inner. It speaks more in wisdom. The ksil, again, the fool, is speaking outwardly. Again, we said that this isn't his real, this isn't his real belief. I mean, he's throwing out this, you know, charge against God in order to be able to, you know, to cover up his own desire to do that which is wrong. Kshidaber bepiv ulefi omek achachma. However, when he speaks from his mouth, from his inner mouth, he has so much frustration that he's not just going to, you know, hurl comments in the direction of the Ribbono Shel'olam. He'll actually come to blows. I mean, in his innermost self, this need to put down God is so strong that he's ready to actually get into a fight over it. You know, if you really push him, if you push him in a hard direction. The Rabbeinu Yonah, again, it's a very fascinating pshat. The Rabbeinu Yonah has a very different, much more pedestrian pshat, I think, coming back to what Rabbi Nayach said before. He writes that Sifsei Ksil Yovo Biriv Upivla Malumas Yikra Derech Bnei Adam Behisvakcham ki as ish al divrei chavero lifamim achare hatochachas bis aksho al divara velo yode aleim. Right, when people fight, when people get into an argument, so, you know, oftentimes the fight builds up, and, you know, when the fight builds up, again, as we said before, it strengthens both parties in their resolve, and they can't really come to any kind of solution. Achaksio kasher yana al divrei chavero tchilas divrei fiu divrei riv machlokes v'chaas. The sign of axil is that the first thing out of his mouth is angry, is combative, is looking to put somebody else down. Again, like we said before, there's certain people you can't, it's very hard to talk to them. You know, even you try to talk to them benachas, and the response is, you know, he swings the baseball bat at you. You know, that's the nature of axil. Again, according to the Rabbeinu Yonah, the axil is the foolish person. Who just doesn't know how to conduct himself in a proper fashion. You go over to him, you know, you ask him, you know, how's the weather? And, you know, he's already swinging. The weather?
Weather by your weatherman?
Well, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, there's just some people that like that. Ki hirgil svasov limadon, he says to Rabbi Yonah, because he's accustomed his lips to fighting. That's how he is. Right? So that's Sifsek Seo Yovo Biriv. He writes, the Lashon Yovo'u, they will come, makes it sound like they work on their own. Kisvasov Melumados Lachlok Viloriv, you've trained your lips as a fool to get involved in arguments. Below Machshava Mukdemes Lidvarov. They almost act on autopilot without you actually thinking about it. You know, the Xil almost is like a Pavlovian response. You talk to him, and already his lips start moving, you know, to respond with some kind of put-down or some kind of argumentative, you know, response. Right? So that's Sifsek Xil Yovo Biriv. Almost his lips, of their own accord, come into a fight. Mm. And that's terrible, he writes. The point of this pasuk is to tell us that, you know, even if you get involved in a fight, when you start raising your voice and yelling, and, you know, just you bring down the machlokas to that level. Pivla mahalumos yikra. He says that the word mahalumos is related to hachraza utsaoka, yelling. When somebody is fighting with you, when somebody is disagreeing with you, you start yelling at him. And why do you yell at him? Again, we see this in real life all the time. You want to wear the other guy out. I figure if I yell at you, whether or not I'm right, eventually you'll just get tired of fighting with me, and you'll leave me alone, and Mimela, I'll be right. Right? Somebody... Talmud Chacham recently told me, he said, maybe you've heard this expression, it was the first time I had heard it. He said, you know, when you're, you know, we're talking about a certain issue, he said, when you're right, you speak softly. If you're sort of wrong, you mumble. When you're totally wrong, you yell.
The empty babble makes the most noise.
Right, right. You know, and that's that, you know, you have nothing substantive to say. So you yell, and you hope that by yelling, you'll wear the guy down eventually. I mean, that's not what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. Yagbia kolo lahalumo sacholekimo liyago ulahal oso. To wear out, to tire down the person who's disagreeing with you. You figure it's a tactic. If I yell at you enough, eventually you'll just leave me alone, you'll concede. Right? And it works. I mean, unfortunately, it works in real life. I mean, because people don't really relish, you know, having someone else yell at them. Right, so I mean, you have to be pretty strong-willed in order to withstand that. So that's the Rabbeinu Yonah says. That's the derech of axil. I mean, it does work, but that's the way of axil. That's the way of a person who's foolish, that he automatically jumps, you know, to yell and to make everything into an argument. I mean, how often in life do you have a disagreement on a point with somebody, but you still respect the person? You know, you don't have hard feelings towards the person, so you bring up It happens very often, especially in a professional context. You know, I mean, I feel, you know, I'd like to do the project this way. You'd like to do the project that way. I mean, you know, I still like you. You're still my friend. You're still my coworker. Just, you know, we have different ways of looking at it. It's not so terrible. You bring up a point of disagreement, and the guy, you know, like whips out his machete, and you know, he's like ready to take you down. That's the derech of exil. There's no reason why you have to do that. I mean, just let's, you know, it's. You know, we're talking about a computer project. Let's just figure out, you know, the best program to use. I mean, it's not like I came and said something insulting about your family, you know, but there's just some people. They're so sensitive, you know, that's just how they respond to everything. But that's terrible, says Rabbi Yonov. Lo manu lihi zoher mi'ar bi'ahakol b'tochachas u'machlokas. We learn from here not to raise our voice when we get involved in a dispute with somebody. B'chein k'siv divrei chachamim b'nachas nishmoim. As the Pasuk says in Koheles, the words of the wise are heard in a gentle fashion. Right? So, you know, that's you know, probably the more pashut pshat, more so than the Malbim in this Pasuk, where basically we're being told, you know, that the way of Iksil is to be very argumentative. And Taked works. But that's not the way of Chachamim. The way of Chachamim is to try to deal with things in a gentle fashion.
Yeah, I mentioned this once before in Shia. I once had a Rebbe. Yeah, I went to Chaim Wilenis, Rabbi Shrekin. So the first day of Shia, he said that the Jews are a very argumentative people. And, you know, B'nai Torah are very argumentative. He says, even when they say hello, one guy says Shalom Aleichem, the other guy immediately says the opposite. Aleichem Shalom. By the way, there's an argument in saying hello.
Very good.
So I don't know. So the question is: is the guy exil, or is he just argumentative? That's the question, really.
What are you trying to say? Yeah. Let's just go back to the Rashi and the previous pasuk on pasuk K. Seis bnei Rasha lo tov lahasto sasadik b'mishva. We passed over before. We'll come back to it. So again, we said the pasuk of pshat is, you know, you shouldn't indulge a rasha because ultimately it's going to lead to a tzaddik being short shifted. Says Rashi, "Kasher pirshu rabbeinu, lo tov lohem lo rishoyim shnosin lohem ponim ba'olam hazeh nifrom lohem lo olam haba." Rashi, like the Malbim, understands this as talking about divine judgment. Right before, we were talking about our interpersonal relationships with the Rasha. We should be very careful. You know, we should be very careful not to indulge the Rasha. Rashi says we're talking about God. God indulges rishoyim. God often gives the Rishoyim a very beautiful Olam Hazeh.
Yeah.
But it's lo tov. Don't think that the Rasha, in the ultimate sense, is going to benefit from that, because all of the good that he gets in this world is going to come off of their account in Olam Haba. So in Olam Haba, he's really going to get smacked. And similarly, for Tzadikim, continues Rashi, tov lohem le Tzadikim, shemachriyim lohem kaf mozayim lechayvim ba'olam hazeh, v'nifroim mehen b'chayeyem la'olam abo. Right? For tzaddikim, lahatos tzaddik ba'mishpat is tov. Right? In other words, Rashi very interestingly reads the word tov as going in both directions in the pasuk. Seis b'nei rasha lo tov, but tov, lahatos tzaddik ba'mishpat. It's good when God perverts and causes difficulties to a tzaddik in this world, because the more the tzaddik suffers in this world, the more he's going to benefit ultimately in Olam Haba. Right? So this is talking about the Darchei Hanhaga of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, and again, with a very, again, not simple, but homiletic interpretation of putting the word Tov, you know, splicing it and putting it in both directions of the Pasuk, it talks about the way God runs the world. And then Rashi adds, Lufi Pshuto Kimashma. Of course, what I just told you is, so to speak, the drasha on the Pasuk. But the simple interpretation of the Pasuk is the way we said initially, in interpersonal relations, we're not supposed to show favoritism to a Rasha, because that will lead to the Tzaddik, you know, ultimately, you know, losing out because of that.
That's a very difficult concept for me to swallow, that we can say that the amount of difficulty in this world is directly related to Olam Haba being more plentiful or something like that.
Right. It doesn't feel good while you're going through.
No, I don't know anybody who actually accept that.
Isn't that a Gaiusha concept?
Well, the truth is that concept goes back to, I mean, Chazal mentioned it in many different contexts. You know, so the end of Parshas Vayeschanan, for instance, says Meshalim Lesonov Alponov LaAvido, right? God pays back his enemies in this world in order to get them, you know, to have them lose out in Olam Haba. You know, so we find that concept, and again, it's one of the classic rabbinic answers to the question of tzaddikim suffering. Well, don't worry, they're suffering in this world, but it's all going to, you know, work out for them in Olam Haba. I think, you know, we find it harder to swallow just because it's harder for us to believe in a mamoshes dikah sense in Olam Haba. You know, I mean, you know, it's like when you tell the kid, you know, you patch the kid, well, you know, this is for your own good. You know, because ultimately, you know, ultimately you're going to turn into a good, upstanding, yeah, righteous individual because I gave you the patch now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's more than that, Rabbi Ram, also, not to interrupt, I'm sorry if I interrupted, but why should that relationship exist? Why should the relationship between being plentiful in this world, however you define that, good health, means, family, other things that people try to experience in this world to have a quality of life, what's called quality of life. Right. Why should that have any impact on Olam Haba?
Right. Right. So I think it's a very excellent question. It's apples and oranges. I think part of the answer might lie in the following. Olam Haba is a spiritual existence. When a person suffers in this world, their material life, in a sense, is being stripped away from them. But it's a growth experience, as we say nowadays, you know, for the spiritual part of them. You know, a person is forced to rise to certain spiritual heights precisely because the material comforts are stripped away. I mean, think of the army, right? You know, we make you go through purgatory, you know, for an extended period of time, boot camp and all of that. Because, you know, the assumption is that if we strip away the material comforts, somehow in the end of the day, the real inner person is going to emerge. So I think, you know, that's part of what's going on over here as well. The tzaddik suffers in this world as a boot camp, so to speak, you know, to prepare and to polish up the neshama so it can receive its ultimate reward in Olam Haba.
But what about the davening? Perosim Olam Hazeh, Karen Kayem is Olam Haba. It seems to be that
certain
gets
things.
Both here.
Right.
And the principle of pleasure of whatever he was getting here, not different than between Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, same, but that thing that gave him the toppings in this world, he's going to get in the next world.
But certain things.
For those mitzvahs.
For those mitzvahs, right. Now, there's
and
a general.
You're assuming that a tzaddik didn't do those, the very basic and fundamental mitzvahs. You're assuming, quote unquote, that he didn't do any of those?
Right. No, so, I mean, look, ultimately, only God can answer the question.
Yeah, I'm just saying it.
Right, but I think one might be able to interpret that famous line from the davening as follows. There's certain things which give you a tremendous sense of satisfaction in this world, in addition to all the spiritual benefits they bring in Olam Haba. I mean, you know, Havas Shalom ben Ish Le'Ishta. Ben Adam L'Chavero, you bring about peace in this world. It makes you feel good. You know, Bikur Cholim, Achnasas Kala, all the things that are listed off over there. You know, they're byproducts, but they give you a sense of satisfaction. I mean, I don't know, the average person who picks up a lulav and esrog if they feel satisfaction over it. You know, they did a mitzvah, okay, good. But there's certain things, Talmud Torah, you know, they give you an inner sense of satisfaction. Maybe that's the peiros that you eat in Olam Hazeh, you know, besides the reward which you're going to get in Olam Haba as well.
Satisfaction seems to be too much a spiritual one. He says, Ochel Perosehem, that it's something literal here. He's getting his teeth into that. He's really supposed to get something much more in return than just that feeling good. Feeling good is for the next world.
Yeah.
You have no body or whatever. And then you can't say he's eating a Peros because there's nothing to eat.
Gets tax exemption. Okay, we'll pick up Ez Hashem next Sunday, and we'll see you then.
And Rashi said the same thing similar.